Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 30th episode of 80 Game Club, the not even close to monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend and co-host, David.
Leave it to me. My hunter-gatherer blood boils. It's time to record a podcast.
That it is. At the top of the show, I would like to mention that 80 Game Club does have a Facebook page where you can let us know what you thought. But as far as future episodes, the show will be at this time probably ending for a while. Mm-hmm. No plans at this time to continue it. 'Cause life happens.
We've both had a lot of life happening and gotten busy, which happens.
It does. My having a daughter definitely was a noticeable impact. And then, just in general, both of us have other things we want to do with our time in addition to playing a video game and then talking about it. So it happens. Mm-hmm. But this is the 30th episode. We're going to talk about a video game, and that video game will be 2011's Hatoful Boyfriend, developed by the manga artist Hatto Maus, doujin circle known as Pigeon Nation, Inc.?
I think Pigeon Nation.
Pigeon Nation? Something like that. Which Hatoful Boyfriend originally started as a Flash game she created as a April Fool's Day joke in 2011, but due to the popularity, worked to develop into a fully realized game that eventually got an English translation in 2014. And there's a couple of things we could go into. I know last episode when we were discussing the game, we were talking about the name itself.
Yes.
Which I believe I'm pronouncing it correctly, of Hatoful, but it could be the Japanese pronunciation of the word, I guess, is more of a Hatafuru.
Hatafuru.
Which could come out to either be hurtful or heartful, right?
Yes.
So, but it's also the way that the English transliteration of the title, it incorporates the Japanese word Hatto, which means pigeon, and is also the name of the game's creator, as mentioned earlier, Hatto Maus, which is
Hatto Maus.
Hatto Maus. What was that?
Moa.
Moa?
Not Maus.
Okay. Moa.
Yeah, Hatto Maus.
And in general, as a dev diary sort of thing, as mentioned before, it was April Fool's Day, where she created a parody of the otome genre. The birds were chosen as the main cast due to her fondness of pigeons. And it was also a way of easing the production cost or time, because she could just use the like regular stock photos or photos that she had taken herself of the birds, which is silly. I don't know if anything too much. Oh, there is a character within the game, San Oko, who is supposedly based on her real life pet bird, Oko-san.
Oh, cool.
And otherwise, I think that's pretty good. There's a lot of stuff about the 2014 HD version, which I believe both of us would have played, right? I don't think you went back to actually play the like a fan translation of the earlier version or anything.
No, it was the Yundi version that's on Steam.
Okay. What was your familiarity with this game, and maybe why you chose it as a game you'd want us to play?
So, I've heard of it a lot. I don't know if it was where I first heard of it, but the main thing I remember reading about it originally was a comic artist who goes by Sela Squid or Kelly Turnbull, who I think I talked about being my main exposure to the God of War series before were her comics. She also owns pet pigeons and has talked about liking Had a Full Boyfriend back on Tumblr when the game came out and Tumblr was a website that people used. And I actually tried to look it up, but I think she drew her own human versions of the characters because she didn't like the ones in the game. Because the ones in the game all look like sort of generically anime.
Yes.
But I couldn't find her drawings again, probably because Tumblr is just like hiding about 50% of all of the posts anyone has made because they have an automated system that thinks everything is pornography.
Okay.
But yeah, so my familiarity with it was from people talking about it online 7 or 8 years ago. And I knew that it was a dating sim about dating pigeons. And I also knew that there was a spooky hidden route that's, a common thing with, well, with a lot of visual novels. I don't know if that's common with dating sims.
I guess I haven't played enough to really know it is a trope. Mm-hmm. I would say that. It is a trope. How about that?
Yeah. I will say, I almost forgot to mention, the reason I picked it was because a lot of people in the U.S. have started to become familiar with sort of dating sim and visual novel tropes because there's a lot of parodies and ones with meta commentary. The one that really, really popularized this was Doki Doki Literature Club. And
yes. Yeah, that was really big. 2 years ago? I want to say that was 2 years ago. Last year or 2 years ago?
I think it was 2 years ago. I think that was 2017. And I mean, for a lot of people, it's interesting because a lot of people played that and thought that, like, this is, there's an article I read that I should look up again, but it basically was saying that a lot of American-made visual novels, I feel like Doki Doki Literature Club maybe knew more about, actual visual novels than some others seem to, some other, like, parodies seem to be, but ones like, was it Dream Daddy, and...
Yeah, that's the one I think of.
I have not and have no desire to play it, but more recently there's a KFC dating sim parody.
Oh my gosh, I did not know about that one.
Oh yeah, you date Colonel Sanders.
I mean, there's the Colonel. Who else? Who else is there?
And then, like...
It's not like McDonald's where there's a whole employees? Cast of characters, right?
I think it's just KFC employees. I don't know.
I'm making a note to look this up later.
But yeah, I wish I could remember who wrote the article. But it was an article about how these are basically like parodies of parodies of parodies because the people who are making some of these games are only familiar with the dating sim genre because they played other games that are parodies that, like Doki Doki Literature Club, that are based on other games that are parodies. So it's like they're sort of like making fun of a genre that doesn't really exist. And, a lot of people, for example, assume that the game that Doki Doki Literature Club pretends to be at the beginning is what, with just, like, generic anime girls that have one personality trait, is what all visual novels are. You know, they're not, like, this is the first time someone's done something, like, self-aware and making fun of that, because a lot of the games that do that are in Japanese only, so it's not familiar. So, all of that is to say...
Or at the very least, they're not on Steam. If you want to get the more classic visual novels, you have to go through...
Fan translation.
Fan translation, or there's... I want to say Manga Gamer? I think that was a legit service that had started up, like, in the last decade to translate those, like, the key novels, stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of those had official translations before. Actually, there's you could do a whole deep dive on Japanese companies reluctantly eventually realizing that they should put games on Steam, even when they're localized. That took a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't think that it was, like, a thing that they should do. Maybe because it requires sharing profit with Steam. But anyway, yeah, for a long time, even official translations, you just had to go to the website of the translator of the localizing company and buy it. So anyway, so all of that was a roundabout way to say that that Hatoful Boyfriend was an early example of something from Japan that did get an official translation even before that. That current trend that is, in that trend where it's a parody of otome games, of dating sims, and it takes this dark turn once you get further into it. So I kind of wanted to see the, I don't know if it's the root. Presumably the team that made Doki Doki Literature Club probably played or is aware of Hatoful Boyfriend as well, but I don't know if that's necessarily true. It's just, an early example, before its time in the U.S., at least, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Different, it was received, I don't know how it was received in Japan, because this is just my perspective, is that it seems like it came out before, in the U.S., before the big trend of parody, what if dating sims were actually dark games.
My memory linked Hatoful in that same time frame as the this is the dating sim that is known for all of the boys that you're trying to fall in love with are pigeons and you're a human girl. The other one that I have linked in this like same time frame was a school where everyone is disabled. I can't remember what it was called.
That was that one was actually developed in, well, I don't know, in the U.S. It was developed by English speaking groups in the first place. It was not a Japanese game that was translated.
But like, yeah,
Kawata Shoujo, I want to say.
That sounds right. But yeah, it definitely, like, I have this game in my memory as being in this like time frame where a mm-hmm. lot of visual novel games were coming out of this, like, they had this hook, this parody sort of hook to mm-hmm. it, which would then be the lens that entire game would go through, and they'd also generally be a shorter game than most
mm-hmm.
Dating sims usually were, which I think again eased the like people playing it and being able to then talk about it sort of barrier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was, I was close, it was Katawa Shoujo.
Okay.
And so that was, that was released in 2012 in English. Hatoful was released in 2011 originally, but also 2012 in English. So those were around the same time.
And, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, similar space of being shorter, kind of self-aware. I don't know enough about Katawa Shoujo to say it's a parody, but it was definitely made by people that were already fans of the genre.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we've covered the pre-ramble stuff. Do mm-hmm. we want to put up the spoiler warning and start talking about the plot of Hatoful Boyfriend?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me go through the plot really quick, and then you can go into a chapter of the story you would like to discuss more. Mm-hmm. And the plot is, overall, pretty simple and straightforward for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
The year is 2188. And the protagonist you play as is a teenage human girl who has been invited to attend the prestigious bird-only Saint Pigeonations Institute. And the game starts with her second year of this high school life, during her hectic and surreal freshman year. The protagonist did not really get to know any of the classmates somehow. and was also just the only human in this school full of birds. But she's looking forward to her sophomore year and plans to find love this time around. And then the story of the dating sim portion of the game follows the protagonist as she goes through interspecies love, hijinks, and mundane high school sort of things of the different like festivals throughout the year, the sports festival and stuff like that, the different holidays. And then at the end of the year, you kind of choose a bird to try and woo at the end. And if you're successful, you make it to an ending. Yay! I would say that sums up the plot.
Mm-hmm. The story part of the story I'd like to discuss would be the alternate route. Then, once you've completed all of those routes, you get the option to start. But it's weird. It actually asks you. When you start a new game, it asks you if you'd like to fulfill a promise long ago, and then it just plays like normal until about halfway through, when the main character, Hyoko, is murdered and ends up, it switches to...
Which is not the bad ending route where you just didn't befriend any of the pigeons.
Oh yeah, that's... eventually explained, but if you don't favor anyone enough to get their ending, then you get a little cutscene where a secret organization points out that you have not gotten close to any of the pigeons, and so you'll just be you have not fulfilled your purpose and you'll be eliminated.
Yep.
It's kind of a convoluted story to get where it gets, but you find out that the point of view switches from Hyoko to the childhood friend character Ryota, who shows up to school and all of a sudden finds out that Hyoko was murdered and her body has been chopped up and distributed to the classrooms around the school, and there's a concrete wall goes up all around the school, and basically, you know, nobody knows what's going on, and you investigate to figure out what's happening, and it's eventually revealed that the creepy doctor who you can... Even before this, if you try to get close to the school doctor and help him, you'll find out that he's a murdering psychopath. So it's
except Shu.
Yeah, Shu. The Shu Iwamine, and except that it's he hints throughout that this mystery route that he's, you know, he implies that he knows what happened, but he's not the one who actually killed her. And after uncovering a number of other secrets from the other characters that were not revealed during the normal route, you eventually reveal that this was all part of a plot to create to nurture a super virus that will kill all humans and use Ryota as the carrier. And the event that triggered this route was that Shu injected Ryota with the virus, and then the next time he saw Hiyoko, it killed her, and then the doctor and his assistant, who was also a secret agent working against him, but I guess was being blackmailed in this case, then distributed the body parts to create this whole scenario just to get Ryota to remember that he met the doctor many years before. The whole thing was very strange and seemed unnecessarily convoluted, but I guess my overall take on it was that I thought it was really interesting how the, for whatever reason, I was expecting the sort of spooky hidden route to be totally separate from the rest of the game. You know, everything else to just be a normal, cute dating sim kind of thing. And there were a lot of, it's not actually separate. It's not like it's an alternate universe where everything's terrible. All of the stuff is kind of going on in the background. It's just this specific event didn't happen. So you find out about, for example, that the teacher lost someone very important to him and that he's been tortured by it. You don't find out who. You do find out, like I said, that the doctor has been experimenting on people, and that his assistant, Yuya, who originally is just like the ladies' man, the ladies' bird of the school, is actually a secret agent that's been working against him. And so, like, all of these things sort of come together in an interesting way. So I thought the actual reveal was sort of underwhelming, as is often the case when something gets really overly complicated for the sake of being overly complicated. But I did appreciate... Sure.
Knowing that it's going to go creepy and you building it up, sure.
Yeah, I appreciated how much that was foreshadowed and how much the quote unquote normal part of the game actually led into that.
Hmm.
And then the conclusion of that is that the other pigeons rescue Ryota and managed to escape this trap, and he decides to stay. There's also a robot that you find out Hiyoko's brain has been put into that just, like, apparently, despite immediately dying minutes after meeting him, the doctor was still able to preserve her brain and put it in a robot to terrorize them throughout the investigation. And so the conclusion of their... You know, everyone else has other things going on and secrets being revealed, but the conclusion of their plot is that Ryota is not going to leave this secret lab that they found because he's still infectious to any humans, and he doesn't want to, you know, kill any more humans by accident. So he decides to stay with Hiyoko's preserved brain until medical science advances enough to A, cure him of being a carrier of this horrible disease, and B, restore Hiyoko's brain to a body.
Okay. I'm just surprised you didn't want to talk about the best actual story in this game. And that is, of course, Carve It Into Your Soul Kid, Love Blaster.
Oh, of course. I mean, of course that's the best. I thought we should at least, talk about the secret ending a little, but the best ending is absolutely with Azumi.
Yes. I mean, Azumi is easily the only character that I could 100% get behind.
Mm-hmm.
Which, just for context, if you don't care about spoilers and are listening this far without having played the game, Azumi is a Java Sparrow that you run into, not actually part of any of the love routes of the main character, but she sort of cameos here and there, And in this particular route, it is if you're in the summer job storyline, and she'll visit and run into her old Vespa gang's leader who had left them. And the two of them fall back in love over this just fantastic moment together, and I loved it.
Yeah, it's like it's a side story that happens if you take a job during your summer, you know, take a summer job during summer vacation that's just totally disconnected from anything else that's going on, but it's great. And then it ends with a little advertisement for the like the actual real world bird cafe that those characters in that story are the real birds that they're based on. It's like, if you're in the if you're in this region, go here and check it out. And then it has a note that this information is as of 2011, so you know, make sure that there's still, you know, look up the current location and contact information. But
yeah,
it's just like, yeah, this you know, turbulent love story that concludes with, by the way, if you want to meet these birds, go to this cafe in Japan.
I don't know if it's still around, but it would be kind of neat if it was. I'm sure, I don't know, what are the lifespan of birds?
Probably not that long,
right?
I mean, yeah. My assumption is the smaller something is, the less long that it lives, and birds are very small. That's that's as much biology information as I know.
Generally true. What would you like? What did you like about this game? Did you like anything about this game?
I liked a lot about this game. I thought, in addition to the way the story is kind of, like I said, it's all the different parts of the story, except for that cafe subplot, I guess, end up coming together. I also liked the these references to real world, you know, birds and events. Like there's the cafe, and the what was it? Brian Pigeon is referenced, which is an actual, like, a blog that's written as though it's from the point of view of a pigeon in London. And that's referenced in the game as Brian Pigeon was one of the first intelligent birds when, like, when birds just started to have intelligence. And so he's become a famous writer as bird intelligence rose. So yeah, I thought that was it. That was a nice touch. It was very cute that it referenced those things. And I didn't, until you mentioned it, I didn't know that Oko-san was actually the developer's own pigeon.
Yeah, based off, inspired. Yeah. I liked a couple of the moments, especially some of the more like character-based moments. Like the Azumi that we mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get into, like every now and then there are these moments of, our main heroine, our main character here, lives in a cave.
Yeah, that's... There's...
And it's just like, it's just a fact.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, I want to know more about this. Like, that's a cool... Or, like, when she goes running and it's like, oh, normal landscape, destroyed buildings, normal landscape.
Yep.
It's like, what was that for there a moment?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, there were a couple of those types of things that intrigued me that, like, ooh, well-placed little, like, teasers, if you would. But, I don't know. I can't really think of much else that I liked.
I thought the characters themselves were, you know, pretty straightforward. Pretty much all of the sort of main route characters were you know, seemed like they had a very simple archetype and then had, you know, one twist that you found out and then that you found out while playing their route that maybe it was serious, maybe it was completely ridiculous, but I mean, I really feel like the whole game was setting up for the finale route, so I feel like they did a good job of making me care just enough about these characters that you know, I was, you know, interested in finding out what else to know about them. So
the individual routes are rather short.
Yeah, I was surprised that about how little you actually got as far as you know, what actually happens in those routes.
Yeah, it really is like, here's the sports festival day, and then it like jumps a month. Like, mm-hmm. it feels like that. It just feels like, instead of going day by day that a lot of dating sims do,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe even just week by week, like this one, it felt like it was month to month.
Yeah. The any of the full routes where you don't, you know, die, go through a whole, basically a whole school year. Although even then, when you get to the end, it's like, the first trimester or semester, first of the three semesters, I guess, is, you know, has a bunch of events and you meet everybody and you decide what clubs to join. And then the summer vacation can have a bunch to do if you, a bunch of events if you go to the cafe to work. And then by the time you get to the third semester of the year, it's like, well, then nothing happened, and we got to the end of the year. I don't know if that's because they're...
And if you skip the job, then that entire break just skips over as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah.
I guess that's... Yeah, I think that's basically a thing that I didn't like, was that I thought the actual... you know, regular route events were very sparse and not terribly interesting.
I would agree with that.
Other visual novels I've played, which again I'm not really familiar with the sort of otome or dating sim types, but other visual novels I've played, maybe with the exception of 999, which was really bad about this, but mostly they...
Not a dating sim.
Well, no, I mean, most of the visual novels I've played are pretty good about letting you skip to parts of the game where you can, you know, make a new choice or make it so that when you replay the game, there's very little overlap between...
Yeah. VLR fixed that.
Yeah. And... Like other visual novel, like Western visual novels that I've played and really enjoyed are We Know the Devil, and I recently played Heaven Will Be Mine, and in both of those games by the same developer, Worst Girls Games, you go through it's just a series of scenes. In one it's like hour by hour, in the other it's day by day, and for each scene, you get a choice of version A or version B, and so you may end up rewatching one version or the other if you're trying to get all of the routes and you know haven't planned it out to have no overlap. But there are very few scenes that you just like long scenes that you just have to watch every time, and in I mean, it also has a skip button, and Hatful Boyfriend also has a skip button, but you just end up skipping so much just to get to a specific route, because you have to get one ending, you have to start the game over from the beginning and make a specific set of choices, talking to the same character and making the right choice every time.
Yeah. And really not much changes.
Yeah, it's not... In most cases, a lot of the events are just like... I mean, as much as I loved Azumi, you have to see the Azumi, like, running, getting lost, beating Azumi cutscene every single time, and it takes a long time to skip through, and, you know, so I probably saw that a dozen times, and, you know, you have to go through, like, five or six electives where you choose whether to increase your wisdom, stamina, or charisma. Although I will note, I did like the fact that matching your character being kind of like a feral, like half feral human beast, your wisdom stat is a 1, your charisma is a 5, and your stamina is an 800.
Yeah.
At least, I assume that's like on the scale of all of the birds around you, which... I was never entirely clear on if the birds are human-sized or if they're just... All of this is happening with pigeon-sized pigeons.
The fact that they are using... Like, everything looks like it's still human technology, right?
Doesn't,
like, she's able to fit on that Vespa.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just... And then sometimes it will have things like... It makes it sound like when Oko-san is going on a rampage, it sounds like she just, like, grabs him and throws him out the window.
Yeah. Like, completely... yeah. I agree. Which, like, sounds like it's still, like, human versus bird.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, that was fun. But like, the thing that I didn't like was that there's a lot of... going through the same scenes, and even with the skip button, it's pretty boring to do like 10 minutes of skipping through scenes to get to get to a new ending. In some cases, an ending that you have to see to unlock the final ending, even though you've seen the entire route, you got the true ending for a character, but you didn't get their non-true ending where all of the choices are the same, but your stats are lower.
Yeah.
So that was very tedious.
The fact that there were two endings for most of the characters, I want to say. I think that's true. I don't care to double check. I gave up. I did not enjoy this game enough. Like, everything grated on me, from the music to the visuals. And the writing just... There's a couple of good moments, but most of it is this, like, really generic. And if you had been able to choose a character and it felt like a significant portion of the route would change because of making that initial choice at the start. Like, I mean, for example... of just how clear I was on how this route should go. When I started the game and they do the introductions of all the birds, all the main character birds, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go with Yuya as my, like, first conquest. Mm-hmm. And then it's not until the very ending that all of a sudden I realized, I don't know how this happened, but somehow I ended up on Kazuki's route. which is the homeroom teacher. And I don't even know how that happened.
I think that one's kind of weird because they give you a lot of the others you have to, like, go talk to them at an event and or like go to the club that they're in. And there's a couple of those for him, but they also just give you a bunch of events with Kazuaki, just mandatory. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can kind of understand how that happened, because it's not very helpfully designed.
No, and so yeah, I don't know. I found it all frustrating. Anyways. I didn't really enjoy the game, and I didn't continue it enough to actually get to the true route. I read some of it on Wikipedia, and I was like, okay.
I wanted to complete it. I also, Actually, I don't know if you need to do both endings for all of the characters to get the to unlock the final route, but there's an epilogue that you only get if you've completed every ending, I guess you could save before you finish the final route and then go back and see the end plus the epilogue, but I just wanted to do everything first to get to the epilogue, which, as I said before, the end for the main characters is that Ryota locks himself in this lab with Hyoko's brain in a jar, and the epilogue, of course, is checking in on each of the characters before they go, open the vault now that they have that technology to save them. So,
oh, okay.
I was glad that I got that little bit, but it was definitely way too tedious getting there.
Anything else you want to say about the game?
No, I think that covers it. I don't know that either of us have noteworthy moments of achievement or frustration, just because the game itself was, didn't have a lot of super highs or super lows, since, as a visual novel, it's not like there were a lot of big challenges for us to overcome.
No. Okay. Well, with that, we have finished talking about Hatful Boyfriend and our last game of the month. The next up, we're going to talk about some of our favorite games of 2019 and maybe look back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But let's close this out like we normally do. I would like to thank Carbohydrin and Funk Fiction for letting us use their songs for our intro and outros, respectively. Their work is great, and you can check out more by following the links in the description. And with that, we shall leave you by saying, game on. Okay. The CD Projekt Red. Let's see. So, do you want to just start with favorite games of 2019?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of games that I went back, old games that I went back and played, especially for the podcast. My favorite is probably Bloodborne. Because I started trying to play that in 2018 and got stuck and very frustrated, but went back to it in 2019 and had a lot of fun, which also kind of feels like when I first played it, I just thought, maybe this whole series / subgenre of games that people absolutely love isn't for me, but
once Soulsborne.
The Soulsborne genre, but so, I didn't want to get Sekiro, for example, in case I got stuck and ended up not playing any more of it, just like Bloodborne. But Bloodborne was really fun on its own, and hey, I know that once I got past that point, I really enjoyed it. So I can, try other Soulsborne games.
Cool. I have had a terrible history with finishing any of the Demon Souls, Dark Souls, or Bloodborne. I've started all three of those, and I make it, I don't even know. You were online with me for that one. How far would you say I was at that point? Not even halfway? Maybe halfway?
I'd say almost halfway. Because I think
That tends to be about where I get in these games, and then I don't know, it's just the world at that point has become so large and there is so many different routes to try and explore to figure out where I'm supposed to be going next that I just find it easier to go to a different game I would say that that's pretty much what happens. But no, that's really cool that you were able to finish Bloodborne, and I'm really excited. And if you want to Sherpa me through, I would certainly join you on that.
Yeah.
My top game that I played in 2019 was Prey. I mean, I gushed about this game on the podcast, so you can really go in depth on with me there. But
yeah, I'm totally with you there. Prey was great.
Yeah, it, not only was it a fantastic game in my opinion, but the fact that I didn't even realize that it was my type of game. Like, having played both of the Dishonored games and thinking, oh yeah, it's going to be another Dishonored, a game that I'm going to enjoy, but not really fall in love with. But the fact that it was really more like System Shock than I had ever anticipated it being, I fell in love with that. And I look forward to replaying it again sometime next year. As I continue to work towards platinum. And also, I'll eventually get around to playing the Moon Crash DLC, which savoring at this point of when I have time, I get to go play more Prey, new Prey, like fresh Prey.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that too. Yeah. I also really enjoyed God of War, which we also played for the podcast. As far as new in 2019 games I played, I don't know that there were any that were like 2018 hands down. Absolute favorite game of the year was Hollow Knight. Before that was Celeste in 2017. I don't know if there's any that jumped out at me that much. I did really enjoy Cadence of Hyrule, though, which was the Crypt of the Necro Dancer and Legend of Zelda crossover.
Which, the music done by Danny B just... I had no idea that was a thing until I don't even know how I found it out. I was just like, hey, let me listen to this soundtrack and realize that I absolutely loved it on top of it being Zelda music. And it's because it's Danny B and I just love all of his work.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he do the music for the original Crypt of the Necrodancer?
Correct.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Basically, in my opinion, if there's an indie game that you absolutely loved the music to, it was probably him. I've been a big fan of his since... what was that game that you were just, like, running? Blanking on it. The city is being destroyed and you just have to run from left to right.
Yeah,
I can't. It's super old, but that was like the first time I had ever heard his music, and I have loved him ever since then with like Super Meat Boy and everything else that he's done.
Cannibalt.
Yes, Cannibalt.
I will say, as a note, if there's an indie game with music that you love, it may also be Jake Kaufman, also known as Vert, because he's done a lot of good soundtracks to like... Shovel Knight and the more recent Shantae games.
Okay.
So just, mostly it's those two though, I will admit. no, that's not fair. The Celeste soundtrack was really good and I'm blanking on who made that, but she's also done a lot of, other games, just not as Lena Raine. Also, does really good work, but I don't think she's just not as prolific as those two.
So you said it really quickly, but God of War is also one of my favorite games that I played this year.
Mm-hmm.
And to round that out, Spider-Man, the third game that we podcasted this year, the first one we podcasted this year, but that was the third on my list of favorite games I played this year. Mm-hmm. Number 4 and 5, though, have been on a lot of contention for me. Those spots have changed out a lot in the last week. But I think I'm going to have to go with number 4 as Into the Breach, which it's a game that I knew I was going to love, but I just kept waiting until I could get it on the Switch, basically, or if it came out on PS4 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got it for free on Epic, and I was like, well, I'm going to have to play it now. And yeah, I loved it. I love it so much. Unsurprising to anyone, I think, because it's a fantastic game.
Mm-hmm. I did mention it before, but Heaven Will Be Mine, I just played earlier this month after, because I really loved We Know the Devil when it came out, and Heaven Will Be Mine, I think, came out last year, and I just hadn't set aside the time to play it, because it is a visual novel, and a lot more, it's about mechs. It's about three...
Oh, I had heard about this game last
mechs.
Year.
Yeah. It's about three mech pilots that fight in space, but it's very kind of high concept. Like, it's where a lot of mecha shows and games and fiction, it's like the Austin Walker of Friends of the Table and Waypoint Radio has said many times that, like, mechs are always about bodies. It's always, like, a metaphor for bodies and what... And, like, you know, how people can, put themselves into war and get injured, or how they have to, modify themselves or their bodies to fight. Heaven Will Be Mine is, like, all of that subtext is completely text. It's like, yeah, their mechs are not designed to kill. If they were designed to kill people, they would just be... a drone with a gun on it, but these mechs are supposed to be extensions of their bodies, and it's like they were designed to fight an alien threat that is fought by essentially asserting your existence and expressing your... Basically, what I'm getting at is it's very interesting. I really enjoyed it. It's also very kind of abstract and high concept, so it took me a while to say, like, I have the time to sit down and play this game a few times to understand what's going on. But I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that I did get to it.
That's great. See, those are the types of games we should have been playing on this podcast. and then the last game, the last game, and I'm still not even, like, entirely sure I want to go with this one at this moment, because I somehow got through 5 games in the last month. So there's a lot of, like, is this just recency bias? Is this just, like, maybe I want to take my Katamari Forever replay and really mark that one as my 5th spot? Mm-hmm. But I did love my time with Rhyme, and for now, I think I'm going to put that as my number 5 game that I played this year. And maybe Kingdom Hearts 3 will be 2020's Game of the Year, because Remind will fix everything, right? Right? Right?
Yeah,
you definitely can play as Kairi! We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised that Kingdom Hearts 3 wasn't wasn't at the top of your list, but it was certainly... It
just had so many problems.
Yeah, it really did.
Ooh.
But we've talked about that.
One of the things that I look at for my games list is, would I want to sit down and replay this game? And right now, if I were to sit down, I would much rather play Kingdom Hearts or Kingdom Hearts 2 or maybe even Birth by Sleep then I'd want to go and replay Kingdom Hearts 3. It's just not high on my list at the moment. But I don't know. Did you get all five of your games? You had mentioned more than five, and I'm not sure how many of those were actually your list or not.
I wasn't really, like, putting them all in order. Okay,
that's fine.
Hold on, let me see. I think Bloodborne at the top. Yes, let's say Bloodborne 1, Prey 2, God of War 3, Cadence of Hyrule 4, and... No, actually, let me try that again. Bloodborne 1... Prey 2, Heaven Will Be Mine 3, God of War 4, and I forgot about Baba Is You. I'd put Baba Is You above Cadence of Hyrule, actually, because I didn't even finish that, but it's a really good puzzle game that really requires wrapping your head around the mechanics in a way that I never quite like. It's really fun when you think that it's suck and totally impossible, and you realize that you've missed one thing that has always been a part of the game that you just didn't notice before. But yeah, definitely Baba Is You is definitely on the list.
I have heard a lot of good things about that, and it is a game I will eventually play.
I actually saw someone talking about Baba Is You in like a wrap up and mentioned something that, like, a thing that happens in later puzzles in the game that I hadn't got to, and just looking at it, I was like, what? You do what?
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, those, I think we covered our favorite games of 2019. What games are you looking forward to in 2020?
So yeah, last year one of the things we did was talk about the 2018 games we missed and what we want to play next year. So I want to actually cover what we said last year before we talk about next year. Mm-hmm. How about that? So for me, I listed out five games that I wanted to play from 2018 I wanted to play this year. Spider-Man and God of War I listed, mm-hmm. and both of those podcasted. Into the Breach... I played it, loved it. The last two, Battletech and Mutant Year Zero, I own both of them. I've started Battletech, but that game is huge, and I have not played enough to even be comfortable saying that I love it or dislike it or whatever. Like, it's huge. It's a lot harder than I had thought it would be. Like, the tutorial destroyed me, and I had to replay the tutorial. But then I immediately got out of the tutorial and started losing people in the main game as well. I was like, oh my gosh, every time though I'm playing it and I'm figuring out, oh, I should be doing this. And so it's like, I need to restart, and now I'm smarter, I understand it better. So it's definitely something that I'm spending time having to learn, but it is one that I'm really looking forward to putting more time into next year. Mm-hmm. And Mutant Year Zero, like I said, I own it, but I haven't carved out that time yet, but still looking forward to playing it. Do you remember what your five games were?
I do not.
The Return of the Obra Dinn,
mm-hmm.
was that... the first game you listed.
Yep, that I played a little bit at the start of the year before my computer died, and I had not replaced it until this month, so I may get back to that, but it was another puzzle game that I kept kind of running into walls with, and I don't know if I care enough to get back into it almost a year later.
Mm-hmm. Mutineer Zero you also listed.
Yep.
Ashen.
Oh, yeah, I should... that one I have not checked out, but I should check out that as well.
Hitman 2, that, which I know you have played.
I did play. I was looking at the games that I played and noticed that was... I played that on... Started playing it December 30th of 2018, so I wasn't sure if I should count it as a 2019 game, but I did... really enjoy it. I think I told you this before once I started playing it. I like the idea of the limited, what are they called? Elusive targets, but that just, in practice, that it ends up being a lot of cool content that I'm never going to probably see because it's so limited. But the Hitman 2 I did really, really enjoy. I've only, like, completely explored one of the levels, which I think is what you're really supposed to do. I may go back to the other levels that I've only, you know, briefly played in the future.
Mm-hmm. I played through the first Hitman, and that was enough for me to know that, like you said, I love the concept, but it's just not a game for me. I am terrible at stealth, and it's cool. I like some of the way that the systems work together, but it's just not something that I want to go through, especially on the more difficult levels as you get in there. The early levels are fun, I would say that, where the difficulty is not as as harsh.
Yeah, that's fair. I feel like I really enjoyed the feeling of getting to know the one level, which was the fashion show in Paris, which was
I think that's a fantastic level.
And I really enjoyed the experience of learning where everything was, doing all of these, you know, alternate methods of assassination and basically mini achievements throughout the level until I finally knew it well enough. In most stealth games, I will only, like, if they have a version that has, like, no or limited saves, I won't bother because I usually play stealth games by constantly saving and then backing up if I made a mistake, but the way that it encourages you to, A, really get to know a space, and B, it's possible to have a very, very short, plan and sort of short game time that you have to do everything perfectly. I did end up planning out my, hardest difficulty, no saving, do it all in one take, assassination, and with nobody saw me, no extra bodies, no alerts. I just got in, killed the two targets and got out. And I don't know that I'll ever feel like getting that in depth in learning and planning any of the other scenarios, but I'm glad that I got that level of mastery.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, and then last game, Hades.
Yeah, that's still looks really cool. I've seen a lot of cool screenshots and people talking about it, but I just don't want to play a game that is in early access.
Same.
And get bored of it and then not want to play it when the full game comes out.
Same. Okay. And then you were saying 2019 games for next year. Control is high on my list.
Yep, mine too. I bought that and I was planning to play it this year, but other games came up first.
Sure. Disco Elysium is really high on my list.
Yep, same here as well. I keep hearing really good things about it in a way that, similar to Heaven Will Be Mine, it's like, I hear about it, and I'm just not...
Oh, my daughter's calling for me.
Sure. Oh.
I think we can wrap it here.
Yeah.
Okay.